One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. Thanks 10 million, by the way, as we we're about to hit 10 million downloads. So thank you guys all for the support over the years. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website to do that. You'll find information about the books, the podcast, the news sites. If you haven't rated the show already, I hope you think we've earned 5 stars. Please scroll down like real quick and give it to us as we fight this ridiculous algorithm battle. And we do it with the best partners in the world, our sponsors. They help to make this show happen. I just had lunch with Ken, the scientist from C60 Power. They make the best C60 out there. It's a carbon 60 atom. It was theorized by Buckminster Fuller. The team that discovered carbon 60 wound up winning the Nobel Prize for it. It is the most powerful antioxidant known to man. And I'll tell you how I know it works. The way I know it works is because when I did a metabolic functions assessment test with Christian Yordanov, we went through the results on his show. We got to a part that it gave a score for DNA damage, and my score was so low that there's green, yellow, and red, and you want it in the green. Mine was so far in the green that it didn't have a score associated with it, and Christian thought that the test was broken or messed up on that one part, and I said, no, this is because I take C60 every day and have for the last 4 years. So if you're interested in something that can really help at least your DNA damage, go to shopc60.com and just take a look and see what you think. The promo code is macro. That'll save you some money. It's the most powerful antioxidant known to mankind. Like, it's really helpful, and it works on your pets. If you have an aging pet, I have a cat. I have 3 cats, but one cat is trained to wake me up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get C60, which is not the greatest habit that I have allowed. But, you know, the cats know that it helps them out. So if you're an aging pet, or you've got an aging pet, you just want to feel a little bit better, go to shopc60.com. Read up about it. See what you think. If you found something that you like, the discount code on your way out the door is macro. And these statements and products have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, prevent, or mitigate any disease. ShopC60.com, promo code macro. And also to the folks at Chemical Free Body, I don't know what to tell you. They make supplements that work. In a world of supplements that are filled with sawdust and dog shit, we've got a product that actually works. Chemicalfreebody.com. Check it out. Go to, or actually, chemicalfreebody.com/macro. If you do that landing page, it'll automatically kick in your discount for you. Get the Green 85. Do the detox bundle. It's a 90-day program. Drink Green 85 every morning. Take a handful of these capsules, and I'm telling you, it'll change your life. I've done it twice. It really, honestly works. But it depends on whether or not you're ready. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can do it. If you want the water hero that Tim James has built, change the water in your house completely. You can have one installed on the side of your house. You can get pitchers that you can just use, kind of like a Brita or a Clearly filtered or something like that. There's a lot going on. So if you are interested, chemicalfreebody.com/macro. Take a look and see what Tim James and the crew are working on over there. Get the Pat Miletich Super Soldier formula as well. All you UFC guys out there who are interested, Pat partnered up with them. So take a look and see what you think. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce to the show to you a new guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mark England. Hey, Mark. Great to see you. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Charlie. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for listening.
Well, you and I got connected through a mutual friend, Abe Max. Abe was on this show a couple of weeks ago, and Abe and I met at Anarchapulco at the largest anarchist conference in the world. He was walking down the beach. He strolls up. We're all out there having breakfast. Everyone at my table knew him already. I didn't know Abe, but I got to know him a little bit on that trip. And I said, hey, we got to, you know, come on my show. And he was coming on, you know, he was getting ready to come on my show. And he says, I'm happy to, I want to talk to you, but do you know my friend Mark England? And I said, no, I do not. And he says, well, you got to talk to Mark, right? So he put me in touch with you. So this is why I'm saying, I'm really glad that you're on here. And the sort of running theme for me at these Anarchapulco conferences is that you go there and you meet somebody who you would have never met in a million years, and they talk to you about somebody else or give you a contact. And then you next thing you know, you're having conversations with people that weren't even at the conference, just like you and I are right now. I always just kind of take my hands off the steering wheel when I go there and just say to the universe, like, let it all flow, baby. Like, put me in touch with the people I need to meet for whatever the reason is I need to meet them, and we'll do it from there. So I'm really glad you're here. We've got a lot to talk about because, well, first of all, let's do this. Just tell everybody what it is that you do, because what you do is extremely important and super powerful. And if only the world knew about it, we might be in a better spot. So luckily we've got you here, and maybe the whole world won't know about it, but at least this audience will. And that's good enough for me. So what are you working on over there, Mark?
Well, you know, for shits and giggles, I help people break Luciferian spells. We don't put that on the website. We run a coaching certification business. So for the past 18 years, somewhere between full-time and overtime, the whole time I've been researching, presenting, coaching, and now teaching on the power of words and stories. We're known in the space. For people that know about us, would have a large following. We're known as the language people. That's cool. Nice to be known for anything. Talking about abracadabra, we're known for doing that. Been talking about that a lot for 10 years. Talking about how to help people dismantle the victim mentality by definition. Mm-hmm. Most people have never heard the definition of the victim mentality. This is my, like I said before we started recording, this is my 455th show podcast that I've been on, talking about one thing, the power of our words and stories. And very frequently, I will recite the definition of the victim mentality, invite everybody to write it down. That puts you in a very exclusive club. And when I say breaking Luciferian spells, I'm going off of Rudolf Steiner's definition. So Rudolf Steiner said any force that seeks to constrict or control is by definition Luciferian. And nothing ever works out for me. Nobody will ever really love me. Everybody's got it so much easier. I can't keep living like this, which forces you to stare at a picture of you continuing to live like that. These are all sentences. Maybe one day I'll get to the gym and lose some weight. Maybe one day, because it's not going to happen with those words. These are all flavors, and the victim mentality has got 31 flavors of ouch and pain and sting and woe and constriction. And people are putting a lot of excess pressure on themselves. That's an understatement, with their mindset, with the story that they tell themselves. So I'll put in Lifted's definition. So in Lifted is our company. I'm one of the co-founders. I'm the head coach. I deliver all of our certifications. We've got over 500. It's not over. It will be once we graduate group 51, because we do 10 at a time for the level one certifications. I'll get to that. We help people break spells by definition. So Webster's definition of a spell is a word or a combination of words of great influence. And people with their mindset, and Lifted's definition of mindset, I'll put it up against any definition of mindset out there. It's the most simple. I don't know which one's the best, Charlie. Ours is the most simple. It's the story that you tell yourself. Your mindset is the story that you tell yourself. And the story people tell themselves is usually of a quote unquote negative. It's negative. Sometimes it's negative. It's downright sinister. And we help people tell themselves better stories. So we can avoid a transhumanistic nightmare. We don't put that on the website either, but that's been a very real conversation in my mind for the past 20 years since I got into what most people would call conspiracies. And my answer to a hellscape that most people couldn't even begin to imagine, which is the end game for the transhumanist agenda. I'd rather avoid that.
Yeah.
For 1,000 good reasons. And in my opinion, the victim mentality is one of the main components of it, which is why it's so promoted. It's the victim Olympics out there. You know? Who's the most downtrodden?
Yeah, exactly. I've been calling it the victimization decathlon, right? There's multiple events you could participate in. And unfortunately, like when we were kids, you know, if you were like a failure or a loser, you would try to minimize that and keep that hidden from the rest of the world. Nowadays, it's celebrated. It's almost like, tell me all of the ailments that you have, all the things that you... It's like, well, I'm dyslexic, and I have ADHD, and I have allergies, and I have this. And it's like, oh, tell me all these things. And it's like you get brownie points for the more ailments that you have, and so that you can say, well, see, the reason why I'm not achieving in life is because I have this long list of things that are holding me back. And you go, well, okay, we all do. It always seemed weird to me that lately, and I suppose it's been happening forever, but lately there's been a real push to sort of elevate those voices. Anybody who's got real big problems seems to get pushed to the front of the line and celebrated, and as opposed to like when we were kids, you would say, no, I want to be somebody aspirational. I don't want to be somebody that's the wheels have fallen off at, you know, by the time they're 16 years old already. That seems very weak to me. But I think as a culture, we've been sort of, a lot of people have been suckered into this, but tell me what's wrong with you. Tell me all the things that you that are going wrong in your life. And it's like, well, there's a big list of things, but boy, you talk about that stuff over and over again about everything that's wrong with you. And it becomes the thing that's wrong with you. You can't escape it, right? I mean, is it the power of words and spell casting? And we know about this from Hollywood and all of this. This is extremely important. Mindset might be the most important component of it all, right?
It's to say it's foundational is an understatement. And yeah, when that gets set up and promoted, and that's how, because kids will do, I was an elementary school PE teacher before I got involved in Snyder, and I've got a degree in education, blah, blah, blah. And what I know firsthand, one, from being there, and two, for teaching, is the kids will do anything for attention. And whoever's getting the most attention, kids are going to mimic that behavior. And if that's getting your dicks cut off, or complain like showcasing and elaborating, like you said, what the biggest problems that you have, or let's say the parents get involved. Munchausen by proxy disorder, I think, is one of the weirdest things going out there. And you know, why does that afflict mostly white affluent women? Anyway, that's another conversation. And so then you get everybody trauma bonding together. That's when, you know, people sit around and talk about their problems, and you got this problem and I got that problem, and oh, you see me and you understand, and oh, here's some sympathy, and then you can give me some sympathy. Sympathy is one of the currencies that's greasing the tracks towards, well, the Borg. And we could talk about, and I did it on purpose. So I put a bunch of stuff out there at the beginning when you're like, tell us about what you do. And I put a bunch of stuff, just threw it on the wall for your audience. Because a lot of podcasts, I can't come in here or I won't, because it's there, you know, you speak to your audience and talk about what we're going to talk about, what we've already started talking about. And yeah, you get the trauma bonds going on, and nature usually doesn't, in the long run, reward self-deprecation and the lowest common denominator. It usually finds a way to take it out, because it's a weakness. And what is that term saying? Only the strong survive. How about only the creative survive? The strong, the creative, the resilient, the healthy. These are all things. By the way, I've been on the C60 podcast. Those are cool people. Oh, nice. So here's my little formula that I saw, and in my opinion, Ray Charles could see it, that I saw about 20 years ago when I started getting into researching this stuff, which was through organic food. I can get to that story in a second. So here's the formula. And if I'm on, cool. If I'm off, that's cool too. So the victim mentality plus technology plus humanity equals the Borg. Star Trek, the Borg. Man merged with machine. The soul is sucked out. Rudolf Steiner talked about that.
Yeah. Talk about it with vaccines.
There's no dance. There's no
to remove the soul.
Yeah. Exactly right. He said that shit. How did he know that? That guy 100 years ago. Look that up, everybody. Rudolf Steiner vaccines. There's going to be a vaccine made that will it will decrease the soul's ability to lock in somehow. And I'm a dum-dum with this stuff. It'll make it hard to stay aligned with your soul or have it in you. Anyway, so the victim mentality plus technology. Technology is not going anywhere. Victim mentality plus technology plus humanity equals the Borg. A hero's mentality, an architect mentality. That's what we call the opposite of the victim mentality. Architect mentality plus technology plus humanity equals Star Trek. We're going out into space, whether the, you know, if the world is round and all that's out there, cool. Maybe we're in the firmament, I don't know. And so it's Star Trek. People retain their humanity. They're making babies the old-fashioned way. The humanness is there. The soul connection is there. And we can evolve in that direction. And so if that's the case, if that's the formula, and I believe that to be true, then I can think of no greater thing for me to do with my time than focusing on helping individuals and groups of people dismantle the victim mentality. Is this a good time to recite the definition of the victim mentality, Charlie?
It's a great time.
Okay, cool. Everybody, grab a pen and paper, piece of paper, if you want to put yourself in a very exclusive club. Most people have never heard the definition of the victim mentality, much less written it down. And when you put pen to paper, is this called the learning pyramid? 30, 50, 80. 30, 50, 80. You remember 30% of what you hear, 50% of what you write, 80% of what you turn around, teach, share, or explain. So I'm going to recite twice the definition of the victim mentality. I'm going to do it slow the first time and then speed it up and give some context to it. And then I'm going to give you an example of a woman that I worked with somewhat recently who said, I've had the same relationship with five different men. And we tracked that down to a series of events that happened with her and her dad, formative years. They called formative years for a reason. And then in those stories, we got to the linchpin sentence, the spell that held the whole thing together. And I'm going to share that with you. So it'll give you an idea of, some of y'all will have an experience with it, like an emotional experience. That's cool. We're built to feel of what happens when you change words. Certain words force us to create the dreaded victim-villain dynamic. So here's the definition of the victim mentality, slow. And then again, the second time I'm going to speed it up. The victim mentality is an acquired personality trait where a person tends to regard himself or herself as the victim of the negative actions of others, even in the absence of clear evidence.
Okay.
The victim mentality depends on a habitual thought process and attributions. That's the verbatim definition of the victim mentality. Here it is, a little faster, with some context. The victim mentality is an acquired personality trait where a person tends, it's a tendency, sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. A person tends to regard himself or herself or zerself as the victim of the negative actions of others, even in the absence of clear evidence. Like that, sure. Second sentence, the victim mentality depends, circle that word, on a habitual, underline that word, thought process and attributions. That second sentence is right between the eyes, right where it belongs. The victim mentality depends, as in it has to have a habitual, which accurately implies duration and addiction. Thought process, what's that? Glad y'all asked. It's how you put your words together. Everybody has a thought process. And then attributions. What's an attribution? It's a characteristic. And other than the words that people use unconsciously, because people are not thinking about their thinking. That's Alan Watts right there. When you learn to think about your thinking, you become alive in a new way. People are not thinking about their thinking. You did not learn this in high school English class. So other than the words that force people to create the victim-villain dynamic, the characteristic that we pay attention to the most after the words is how people breathe. There's a reason why most people's breath is trapped in their chest. And it comes down to the stories that they keep in their head that are super scary and how they use their words on the regular. And so I'm a very, very, very simple man. I've only had two real jobs, an elementary school PE teacher, and now this. Okay. I struggled massively all the way through school. Took me a long time to get all that out, to get out of everything. I have a handful of MMA fights, amateur, way back in the day. It's like, I'm not cracking nuclear fission, OB. What I do pretty well is take something that's complicated and make it simple so I can understand it, right? And so what we do in a very simple way is teach people about how their language, and when I say language, I mean internal dialogue and external dialogue. What we think, say, and write, how those words influence us for better or for worse and other people in our lives, because we make sounds with people all the time, and it influences them. Trust me, abracadabra, with my words I create, with my words I influence. Abracadabra does not mean magic, everybody. It's Aramaic. It's an ancient word and principle. It translates to with my word I create, or with my word I influence, and they would triangulated and wear around their neck to remind them of the power in the spoken word. And we just throw words around and, you know, not think about our thinking. So that right there, if y'all wrote that down, you're now in a very exclusive club. And here's an example of what I'm talking about. This woman came in and she wanted to work on her relationships. Okay. She was on her second or third divorce. And she said, I've had the same relationship with five different men. So we got into some of the specific of that, those stories, which created some feelings and emotions of not being good enough. I'm going to sound smart for a second. We all know what not being good enough is. There's a name for it. There's a the fear of not being good enough. A telephobia. A telephobia is the fear of not being good enough. Tony Robbins knows a thing or two about all this stuff. And he said 95% of everything comes down to that. And I'm right there with her. He's right. And so she had this fear of not being good enough, not being worthy, had a fear of abandonment because her dad left. And we got some of those stories down of her parents fighting and when they were sat down and in the kitchen, half the time it happens in the kitchen, the kids were told they're getting a divorce. It's usually a very before and after moment for people. And we wrote that story out because we're big into writing. Big difference between stories kept in the head and stories written down. And the main culprit sentence in that story was this. Everybody write this down for shits and giggles and an experience. Some of y'all are going to have an experience with this. This is what she said. If my dad had loved us more, everything would have been different. If my dad had loved us more, everything would have been different. I say that three times for effect. If my dad had loved us more, everything would have been different. And I had her repeat that. So she's staring at the picture that it created. Because 2 + 2 = 4. If my dad, that's one component, had loved us, another component, more, everything would have been different. So dad's in the picture. Everybody's in the picture. He's either doing something to them or not doing something to them. Either way, it's bad. He's the villain. They're the victim. 2 + 2 = 4. It's going to happen every single time. You're wasting my time. Same thing. They're in the picture. I'm in the picture. Versus, wait a minute, I'm wasting my time. Who wastes more of our time than us? It's not even a close second. But we can blame people all day long, depending on how we put our words together. And so I had her repeat that sentence. If my dad had loved us more, everything would have been different. She was feeling the feels. And I said, take your pen and scratch out the word us and put in the word himself.
Yeah.
It's like somebody hit her in the face with a brick.
Yeah.
For the right reason. And she had this, her eyes got really big. And then these waves of emotion and release came out of her. All that pressure, tension, tightness, trapped breath, heaving, crying. If my dad had loved himself more, everything would have been different. There's a formula for taking shit personally, and it's in our language. It's embedded deeply into our language. And I don't know whether it's just some strange phenomenon of evolution or some weirdos got around and cooked up how to, let's get people to trick themselves about their power and give it away, quote unquote, give it away, and we'll get them to create a prison planet for themselves in their own mind, and we won't have to do shit except sit over here and, create fiat currency. And write a bunch of weird laws. And so she got all of this out. She was like, it's true. If he had he didn't love himself, and it the way he treated us, it wasn't about us. It was about him. And then we kept going. Everything would have been different. Take out everything, put in heat. If my dad had loved himself more, he would have been different. And now what that does, if you think about the imagination, the pictures that it extracted, it took them completely out of the picture. Now it's just him and him. And that woman walked out way lighter and way brighter. And that's one of many examples of stories of how we help people liberate themselves. And I mean, I suffered full disorder when I first got into those people who claimed conspiracies. I hadn't done any work on my mom's story, my dad's story, the guy that kicked me in the knee when we were just warming up and jacked my knee up. And so I had to get my second knee surgery over there in Thailand, and my fight career tanked and all these things and all the villains that I had created on a personal level. And then I started layering in Monsanto and chemtrails and vaccines and the Illuminati and reptilians, because that's how it went. I moved over to Thailand. I'll tell this story real quick and then I'll shut up and take us wherever you want to, Charlie. So me, I think I'm tough. In 2002, I moved to Thailand. I thought it was going to be over there for 1 year. I ended up living over there for 10. Still sounds strange to say. And the plan was go over there. I won a couple of state championship kickboxing titles and was doing okay on the amateur MMA scene. Let's go over there for a year, polish up my Thai boxing skills, come back and go pro. So I go over there and the wheels come off. I have my second knee surgery. The whole thing tanks. And I turn that story into the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone. I used it as a final piece of damning evidence in a case that I was secretly making against myself, that I was not good enough. There was something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with me somewhere. I'm doomed to fail, blah, blah, blah. And now I've got the proof. It's over. I am a loser. Confirmed. And so after about a year of not laughing, I go to this spa. I was living in Bangkok. I was teaching elementary school PE, and they were doing these cleanses, these detoxes down on an island called Koh Samui. And there was all organic food. Everybody was talking about all the weird shit. And I come back. I go and do a 7-day cleanse. I'm like, my God, I do feel better. I might have a chance to get out of this. And so I come back. I start researching organic food, and it was those websites. Remember when the links were on the side?
Yeah.
And it was like, you got to eat organic. And then over on the links were, it was like, fuck Monsanto. And I'm like, what's Monsanto? It's just a rabbit hole, dude. And then I read about Monsanto and I'm like, oh my God. And then on those websites, it was, fuck the vaccines. I'm like, what the hell? I got vaccines when I was a kid and I read about the vaccines. And on those are the vaccine websites. Then it's fuck chemtrails. And I'm like, what's a chemtrail? This has all happened in a matter of 2-3 months, and then chemtrails to the Illuminati, and then the Illuminati to reptiles, and then I'm reading David Icke books, and I got steam coming out of my ears, right? And I've been in the weirdo camp for since 23 years, full on.
Nice.
I told my parents, I told them, there's this thing coming. This was in 2012, 13. They'll talk about it forever. They thought I was Captain Crazy. There's this thing coming, QR codes, forced or compelled vaccines. All the news outlets are going to sound the same. Did I say lockdowns? The whole thing showed up. And it's just because I was reading people that read their white papers. The whole thing showed up just like it. And I was just sitting here. As soon as that thing dropped, I like AK-47s. There's just something about the platform, you know? And so I'm sitting here waiting out at the farm with my freeze-dried food. If anybody had showed up with a bunch of vials, they were going to get 7.62x39 shoved up their ass, and I'm going out with them. Like, okay, we're all going to die. I'm just not playing this game. I'm not doing it. There's no scenario that I could, under any kind of, I mean, jump out from behind a dumpster, okay. Roll up on a checkpoint. Now let's just, you know, make a bunch of noise. Okay. Blaze of glory. But I'm not doing it because I know what's behind it. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's a lot.
I'm glad. It's funny because everybody's story is a little different. I mean, you know, what's funny is that I was into all of this stuff as well by about 2004, 2005.
Nice.
But the book that opened my eyes, Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. I actually read that book in Thailand on a dive trip at Koh Phi Phi Island, sitting on a boat doing three dives a day. I'd go down and I remember this was how I knew it was a good book. And I remember being down at the bottom and looking at my gauge, and it was like, it's time to go up. And I was like, well, it sucks that this dive is over because we're just getting into some good stuff, but it's time to go up. At least I get to continue reading that book. That was what I was telling myself. So I remember reading that
and it changed my life, and it added the whole economic component to it. And so, and then led me down the path. And now I'm reading, you know, I'm reading David Icke books as well, and I'm watching his videos. And flash forward on my little personal journey to this February, me standing on the stage at an Acapulco, emceeing the event and doing a live interview with David Icke over my shoulder on the big screen, with the live audience there, asking questions from the crowd and doing this with, and it's the second year I've done it with him. So it's like, I look back on my sort of evolution of this whole thing, and there's certain people that just had a bigger impact than others. And and sometimes it was books, and sometimes it was videos or presentations, and you never really know what it was. But John Perkins and David Icke, man, they kicked my head open about 20 years ago. And I started to see things differently. I'll always appreciate them for that. But I gotta follow up on this one question about the victim mentality, because in that definition, the very first sentence is, it's an acquired personality trait. So if it's acquired, we can discard it, correct?
Correct. A less fancy word for acquired is learned. It's a learned personality trait, which brings up a variety of good points here. You could also say inherited accurately, because we inherit our language. Most people, it's an interesting thing to contemplate language as an inheritance. Most people think it's, you know, a little bit of cash, hopefully, when the parents croak, or if you get, you know, your eye color or something along those lines. We inherit the stories that our parents told themselves. We inherit the stories and the words and the sounds that our parents used with us, the language patterns, just look at accents. You know, it's very specific. And then you can get into some really weird shit with epigenetics. An inherited trauma, okay? Epigenetics, epi means above or before, and then genetics, it's your genetics. So what's above or before, another way of saying that, what turns on, turns off genes, okay? It's energy. Look up cymatics. Cymatics, somebody's feeling a certain way, that's an energy imprint, and it's going to affect the geometry in their geography, as in how they go about living their life. And you change the frequency in cymatics and you will change the pattern. And yeah, so it's a learned personality trait, often at an unconscious level, because who would want to model victim-centric behavior knowing what the outcome is, which is pain and suffering. And then the unlearn means to undo the effect of. So another way of saying what we do is we help people unlearn the victim mentality methodically. And simply, that's one of our main calling cards. I don't get into neuroscience. That shit's way too complicated for me. Right. I'm rubber meets the road, words and breath. Let's get those stories out of your head so we can look at the words, so we can look at them and then make some changes. We got to slow the story down. And I believe that we are, if someone told me that we're creating these control systems because of 8 billion people collectively projecting out different variations of the victim mentality onto the feedback system that the universe is, I'm not saying that it is that, I'm saying it could be that, then, and all that is a reflection of the collective victim mentality. Cool. And if it's not, If it's just strictly metaphysical parasites and a bunch of satanic pedophiles, that's cool too. Or a mix of both, that's cool too. Either way, I'm doing the same thing. Right. That's when I came to some existential comfort about this whole thing. I've gotten my life to a place where I'm doing this work regardless. Not to save the world, not to help humanity. Those are, you know, or do my part to save it. I'm doing this work because I think it's cool. I think something about it just fascinates me. And as in help, what happens when people change words? And I got to that existential comfort in May 2020. One of our coaches called me. So May 11th, 2020 was the day when it was declared a global pandemic 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And those guys, one of our coaches called me or sent me a text in May. He was freaking out. And I'm like, yeah, sure, let's get on a call. And so I'm driving. I remember exactly where I was driving down to see my nieces and nephews. And I got on a call with him, and he's freaking out. He's like, oh my God, this and that. No, what are you going to do? And I thought about it. And I said, buddy, I don't care if a thermonuclear warhead is about to land on my fucking nose. I'm going to work. I'm going on podcasts. I'm sending the emails. I'm teaching classes. And Buckminster Fuller would agree. He said, I'm paraphrasing. He said, it's going to be a neck and neck race to the very end. So come what may, it's like, you know, okay, you're doing this. I'm doing it. Whether the world is flat around, I'm going to do what I'm doing. If everybody up on Capitol Hill is a fucking reptile, I'm still going to do what I'm doing. I'm not going to live any different. And that's when, and I'm not going to treat the people in my life around me any different. That's when I got to that place and I was like, oh, this is great, man. You know, then in a very real way, I'm free. Mm-hmm.
What did you notice during the COVID era? Because it really broke a lot of people. It separated families. Mm-hmm. It put people in a very, you know, a fight or flight state of mind. And they were ready to, you know, they were ready to curl up in a ball and just take it. And a lot of people lost their humanity during this. Not only did it break them down mentally, but it broke them down like as a person, like the way that they would treat their neighbors or their family members. Well, you can't come in here unless you're fully vaccinated, you know, you're on board with the thing. It's like, well, I've known you my entire life. I'm good. No, you're dirty. You're less than. It ruined a lot of relationships. How was your world? I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing regardless. But sometimes are better than others. And during that time, things were very chaotic. Were you finding that people were drifting into your orbit more than before or less? I mean, was fear getting the best of them, or were they able to recognize, like, I need to fix this, that there's a problem here? How was COVID for you?
COVID for me was awesome for a variety of reasons. One, my business partners, We're long timers in this conversation, and the decision was made a very long time ago before this thing showed up officially, what we were going to do and what we weren't going to do. I've heard a number of people say, you know, whatever you did over COVID is you got a good look at yourself. Okay.
Yeah.
And when they rolled this thing out, I was like, okay, you're going to do that. I'm gonna go to work, and then I'm also gonna sign up for every fucking gun training that I can get my hands on, and I did, and I'm still doing it. Look up Haley Strategic Partners, everybody. I've been training with those guys. I went on tour with them for the past 2 years. They're super cool with this whole thing too. I set a company record, a training record. I went and did 19 3-day trainings with them. And these are 10 hours a day in 18 months. I was the first student they've ever had to hit 500 hours, much less in 18 months. Because I work online. I just take my stuff with me.
Right.
We've got some acreage here in Virginia, and I had a plaque made. It says Slate River Range. And we got steel out to 300. Slate River Range established March 11th, 2020. That's the day that they declared the pandemic. And then in Latin, it says Nucus me lingit, which is lick my nuts. I'll send you a picture, buddy. Let's exchange some phone numbers after this, Charles. Let's stay in touch, man. You're a homie. I've got access to a lake house, you know, lucky us, you know, my dad, he played football really well and started his own chain of convenience stores. He did well. So, you know, I stayed up at the lake house and had parties the whole time.
Yeah.
I had parties, weekend parties. We probably did 5-6 weekend parties up there. And then probably 15 work retreats where we'd get the whole team and maybe 10 people up there. It was very social for me.
Good.
Nobody was wearing masks. Everybody was at home twiddling their thumbs, and all of our certifications are online. And so we were positioned, perfectly positioned, to capitalize on those STEMI checks and people needing community and wanting to do something quote positive for themselves. And, you know, we are good at what we do, and we give a shit. And so we did very well during COVID. So yet COVID wrecked some people. It also strengthened a lot of people.
For sure.
You know, myself and my business partner, my friends and everything, we were tight before, and now it's just bedrock solid.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you know, my family, one person got one shot in the extended family. That's very low. That is very, very low. And it's because I was a crazy person, and I said all this shit way many years ago. So yeah, I'm like Alex Jones. I want a pro human future.
Go ahead, Trevor. That you were able to get your family to listen to you. That is a rarity. A lot of times there's a lot of people who have been talking about this in advance or even when it was in the process of happening, myself included, talking to people close to us. And we were not getting a very positive response. We were getting, you know, well, let's hold off and let's see how things play out, or you're not a doctor, or, you know, or maybe you're right, but I don't know. I still, you know, all the excuses that we have. So you see some of that victim mentality impacting people during COVID a lot. You know, I'm the victim. I'm here. I'm home by myself. I can't do any of this. I can't. And then that becomes embedded into your mindset. Do you think it's possible that some people just do not want to be successful because it comes with too many responsibilities of being successful, that they've just decided it's easier to declare themselves a failure and then punt on the responsibility of being successful or being, you know, fulfilling yourself, and that you just say, well, maybe if I just never had it, then I won't know what I'm missing or something along that. How's the mindset of people that choose not to be successful when you know that they actually could be?
I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a name for it somewhere. And I have a copy of the DSM-5, which is, the DSM-5. There's titles and labels for all kinds of anything you could possibly imagine. There's a label and some meds. I'm sure that there's a phobia for success, the fear of success. I'm sure it's got a name somewhere. Yeah, I mean, cognitive dissonance. I mean, it's a very real thing, and the stronger people's victim mentalities are, the harder it is going to fight them for. It's going to fight them when it comes to being successful. Absolutely, many people are much more comfortable and will do Cirque du Soleil mental backflips to create excuses for mediocrity. There's that. And then there's also sunk cost, you know, psychological and emotional sunk costs. I've been listening to my doctor, you know, all these years, right, you know, for me to go on alternative websites and disregard. I mean, I know I can think of 10 people that I would have bet everything they would have said no to the vaccines.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, said yes because their doctor told them to. Or they, not that anyone said anything to them, they just made it up in their head that people at work would judge them. No one at work judged them. They created this scenario in their head, a hypothetical situation, and then went and got the whatever was in those things, some nanotech for your ass. And then they were mad because no one ever said anything. They talked themselves into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got an apple orchard out there. I'm no doctor. I'm the exact opposite of a doctor. I don't have the mental faculties to become a doctor. I'm not that smart. Never will be. I was in retarded kid classes in middle school. Seriously. And, some good kids. And this one guy, football player. He was about 60, you know, ran some local prisons around here. Good God. Good dude. Very well respected. Got the shots a couple days later, stroked out, blood clots in his lungs, and it turned it. This is my favorite. I've got a number of good stories like this. Turned the top of his skull to mush.
How?
He's out there in our family orchard with a yellow hard hat on, picking apples. Because of an apple, his doctor said, if you go outside and there's any opportunity for anything falling on your head, including an apple,
wow,
you'll die. He had a hard hat on. I saw it with my own eyeballs out there. Because if an apple fell on his head, he's a dead man. And this dude was big and strong and like an athlete, an old school athlete.
Right.
Dude, what in the hell are, no one's going to prison about that shit.
No.
Not one person that I'm aware of.
No, I'll tell you what. If we wanted to have a victim mentality, we would have plenty of good reasons from our government. They give us plenty of reasons to be a victim. And because they're constantly victimizing us. And I think there's maybe a line that where you can draw where you're allowed to recognize that you're being victimized. Maybe it's not necessarily that you're internalizing it or necessarily complaining too much, but you're allowed to recognize the state is abusing me and they are making me into a victim. And I need to, acknowledging that, I don't think is sort of playing into the defeatist mindset of saying, oh, I'm always a victim. You're allowed to recognize if somebody is legitimately making you a victim, but then staying in that situation. And the way I've kind of described this is that if you had a relationship with your spouse, like the way the state has a relationship with you, you would file a restraining order against them immediately, or if not divorce them a long time ago for the psychological manipulations that they play with us. So I feel like we do get victimized, and it's important to recognize when that's happening to us. But there's that line, right, between like where you recognize it and where it becomes your identity.
Very good point. And I'm imagining that a lot of your audience was thinking the same thing. Here's the point with that, everybody. One of the calling cards of the victim mentality is having little choice or no choice. And dismantling that or turning the volume down on it, one of the exact opposite of the victim mentality is creating choices for yourself. There's so much stuff that people can do to get in the game and counter these forces. How about grow a garden, get in shape, hang out with cool people. Start a podcast. Teach people about the power of words and stories. Go to Anarchapulco. If somebody was like, okay, you Charlie, sit down with a piece of paper. You got an hour to come up with 100 legitimate things that one would make some babies the old-fashioned way. Okay, come up with 100 things. You have 1 hour that are antithetical to the transhumanistic agenda. We could do that in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, you'd probably enjoy all that stuff. At the end of the day, it's about getting control of the few.
Yeah. The old fear. It runs our lives, our little lizard brains, you know. We get in there and we start making calculations. Well, what if this, if I did that, then this bad thing could happen. Or if I did this, then this other bad thing could happen. And we're always sort of, I think maybe in a protective kind of way, we're trying to keep ourselves out of situations that we think would be detrimental to us. But I've talked myself out of some good things by dragging fear into it. You know, I've envisioned a scenario that doesn't exist except in my mind, and I have allowed that to talk me out of
you know, well, if I did that, then this could happen or that thing could happen. And so there's no point in it. And boy, I mean, I feel like it's one thing when your parents are telling you you can't do anything or you'll never amount to anything. And that's a whole nother side. But our internal self-sabotage, what the chances that we didn't take because we thought that there might be some bad outcomes from it. I don't know how you can never quantify that, right? That might be the most devious thing. I put that in the same category as self-censorship, right? Like all the things that you could have said, might have said, wanted to say, but didn't say for a variety of reasons. At some point that starts to feel very heavy that you're not letting yourself be authentic. And I wonder about that with just our overall mindset. Like, are we our own worst enemy?
Most of the time. And it's also only part of us. If the victim mentality was the totality of someone's mindset, they wouldn't get out of bed. Okay. Most of the time, the victim mentality, or that shit ass voice in your head, it's a small part. It's just the loudest. It's just the loudest. And you know, was one of the things we do in the certifications is, and most people would pay not to take our certifications because they're very confronted first and foremost, because it's an inside job. The inside job when it comes to working with people and their mindset is to work on your own first. And in the second class of our level one certification, all right, everybody, you know, raise your hand if you've got a shit-ass voice in your head. You've heard it before. Maybe you heard it yesterday. Every single person that's walked in our doors has said yes to that. And I'm not surprised. And we pick up a pen, even though it feels like it weighs 600 pounds, and give that voice a name and write a couple paragraphs about all the not-so-sweet nothings that it whispers and quite often yells. And that's an important point when it comes to making improvements to your mindset. The definition of a spell, not mine, Webster's, is a word or a combination of words of great influence. And the number one way to break a spell is to write it down on paper. Even the stuff that you're not so happy about, or you're scared about, or you're embarrassed about. And then we would then bring, like I said, we get that voice title and written out and do some things with it. It's so much easier to deal with the words when they're on paper versus in their head. And I'm journaling is one thing. This is something different and specific. How much time do we have?
As much as you need, man.
Okay, cool. Can I gift walk the audience through an exercise that will turn the volume down on big picture overwhelm and fear, and the technical term is called catastrophizing.
Yes.
Okay,
please
cool.
Please do.
I'll do that in about 5 minutes. And then if, say again.
I said, yes, please do. We all need to turn the volume down on our heads sometimes, that the internal voice sometimes needs to take a break.
Okay, perfect. We'll walk through this exercise, everybody. It's very simple. It's 4 steps to it. And then if it's okay, because I do have a pretty good Alex Jones impersonation, share the story of how I went from Amish country, Virginia to on InfoWars.
You better.
Okay, my man. Okay, everybody. So this exercise, it's the title of it under the Enlifted Method umbrella, it's called catastrophizing. And it's the exact opposite of what most people would think to do with a story of ouch and pain and sting and woe. So I want you all, I'm going to walk you all through it. So I'm pretending, this is what I'm doing over here on my headset. I'm pretending that everybody's listening to this. They've got a pen and a piece of paper. I want you to give it a title, the worst case scenario that you can imagine moving forward into the future. Okay. We're going to turn the volume down on the fear and we're going to unlock the breath. I want you all to write for 5 minutes. Okay. Hit pause on this once I'm done with this first. We were on Danny Morell's podcast about 3 months ago. He gets maybe 250,000 downloads per episode. And we did this exact same episode, got a ton of great feedback on it. We're not specifically catastrophizing. Title the worst case scenario, and I want you to write for 5 minutes, conversational writing. So writing as if you were telling the story, erring on the side of more detail than less, full sentences with punctuation. I don't make the rules. Half sentences and bullet points doesn't cut it. The devil is in the details. The details meaning conversational writing. So writing as if you're telling the story. I want you to write for 5 minutes as if, write for 5 minutes about what you're most scared of moving forward into the future. Could be an economic collapse, could be supply chain issues, could be 6G Big Brother, nanotech, swarms of drones, alien, whatever, Project Bluebeam, whatever it is. Write for 5 minutes on it, conversationally, hit pause. I'm assuming that you're back. Step one, title it, write it out just like you did. Step two, I want you to read what you wrote. Read what you wrote and allow yourself to have any feelings and emotions that come up. It's normal. It's natural. Okay, that's step two. Hit pause, read it. You're back. Step three, same story. I want you to read the exact same story 30% slower than your normal rate of speech. This is super important. What happens when someone slows down their rate of speech? Glad you all ask. The breath starts to loosen up. Here's a very reliable, it's not a principle, it's a law. The faster the story goes, the harder it is to change. The faster the story goes, the harder it is to change, because the faster the story goes, the tighter the breath gets in your chest. And just like running sprints, when you go out and run real fast, you get myopic. You get tunnel vision, and you can only see what's ahead of you, and same thing with stories. Stories kept in the head go super fast. Breath gets trapped in the chest. We get myopic, lose access to our creativity. We zoom in. So step three, that same story, read it slow, 30% slower than your normal rate of speech. Pause. You're back. Step four, this is it. Same slow read, 30% slower. At the end of each sentence, I want you to do the unthinkable. I want you to do this. So read it slow. I'm afraid we are heading into a nightmarish, technocratic, pedophilic overlord system, period. And then read the next sentence slow and get the breath in there, full in, full out. And then read the next sentence, full in, full out, and read the entire story slow with the breath in between each sentence. Pause. Here's what's going to happen. Is we're talking about the mechanics of storytelling. Stories kept in the head, which is where people keep their scary stories, breath trapped in the chest, picture is in your face. Wherever you go, there you are. Pick up the pen, even though it feels like it weighs 600 pounds, write it out, and loosen up the breath. As the breath descends, the picture zooms out. It's mechanical. If you're watching this on Rumble, then you understand why I just got muffled. The picture zooms out and you go from the participant to the observer. And that right there, everybody, will massively decrease the fear. And if you want to navigate, fill in any apocalyptic scenario, the better you breathe, the better you do. If you breathe well, you're going to make it. If your breath gets trapped in your chest, you're fucked. I don't care what it is. If you get a call from someone who you've been, you know, having some fun with and they're pregnant, I may or may not have had that experience recently. Or how about when your dad dies? September 6th, 2 years ago, my father died. Right over there in that room. I pronounced him dead. And because I was able to breathe well, I navigated that whole thing the way he would want me to. He was an entrepreneur. He was an entrepreneur. And I didn't tell anybody for a week. I went to work. I was on a podcast 3 hours later, a big podcast. I made all my classes. I made all my sessions, all the work meetings, all the podcasts. I didn't tell anybody till the next week. And all hell was breaking loose in the house, in the family. Okay. And I'm out here doing what I'm doing right now because I know how to breathe pretty well most of the time. So yeah, we're known as the language people and might as well be known as the breathing people because it's about the breath. If you breathe well, you'll do just fine, regardless
of what it's so important, Charlie. Too. I went through a transcendental meditation class over a four day period. And this was years ago. And it really sort of got me into, they really wanted me to focus on paying attention to my breathing. And it's so funny because it's such a, you know, it's such a natural element of just being humans. We never really think about it. And maybe if you're at the gym, you're a little out of breath or whatever, that's when it comes into it. But just going about our day-to-day life, most people are, the last thing they're thinking about is breathing. It's automatic for them. They're certainly not thinking about the quality of the breath, but every single person I talk to who does a lot of work in the space of, you know, improving somebody's focus or their mental clarity, they all without fail, all talk about breath. So it has to be important. I don't know a ton about it, but I know everybody I talk to tells me the same thing. So I, from time to time, when I'm in a situation, I try to be mindful and breathe. And I'll tell you about a situation that this last year at an Acapulco, having a shamanic ceremony with Bufo. And Bufo is very scary. Well, scary in the sense that it's the most powerful psychedelic known to man. And so you go into that knowing like, okay, you got to be focused and you got to be sort of aware and you got to be on it. And I caught myself right as the trip was kicking in, realizing that I was doing this. I was like holding my breath, you know, because it was so intense. And in the middle of it, I remember telling myself, breathe, 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 breathe. You know, like you could almost kind of forget to breathe. And as soon as I got my breathing under control, and I wasn't trying to like hold my breath like I was going underwater to experience some trip, I flopped out. I laid back and I flopped out and everything kind of kicked off and it was great. But it wasn't until I got my breathing under control because I was getting a little bit fearful of where it's going because it's so intense. And it's that temptation to sort of like, I'm just going to hold it in. And it was the last thing I needed to do is hold it in. And once I got my breathing under control, things opened up. So I'm glad you're talking about breathing. It's one of those things that, you know, it's easy to be dismissive of and go, yeah, breathing. Okay, got it. Yeah. It's like when I have Tim James from Chemical Free Body on, he's talking about eating. He's talking about how you have to chew your food more and how, you know, the process of this. He's like, you have to be aware of this. If you're aware of it, you'll do it the right way. And if you're not aware of it, you'll be doing it the wrong way. And I'm like, God, I have to remember instructions on how to eat too. You know, he's like, yes, you have to. And so, but as I've gotten better at it, I've sort of normalized it and made it a bit of a habit. And so things have changed. So are you of the belief that people can break out of this rut that they're in and change some things about themselves, about maybe their breathing, maybe that they can really, really change their lives without investing in, you know, psychotherapy or all the things that traditional medicine says you need to fix? Or you think that this is really, really makes a impact with a lot of people?
I promise you it'll make an exquisitely profound impact and improvement to anybody's life who gets their breath low and slow and keeps it there. So most people's breathing is high and tight, unconsciously. There's so many ways to go about unlocking the breathing. First things first is to know the importance of the benefit side. And I mean, if you got kids, I'm assuming a lot of people listening have kids. We also inherit our parents' breathing patterns. Okay. Yeah. It's called entrainment. Look it up. And when parents breathe well, their children automatically mirror those breathing patterns. And that's why a lot of, well, it's very rare for a child in a high stress environment. What is that? That means everybody's holding their breath. In a high stress environment, to come out cool, calm, and collected. That's very rare. And here's an example. A guy joined our level one certification at the time I was taking sales calls. This was a few years ago. And we allocate 1 hour for those calls because we want to make sure that everybody knows what they're signing up for, which most people they do. And we've got questions for them. They've got questions for us. Cool. So anyway, this guy gets on the call and he owns a CrossFit gym in Texas. And first thing out of his mouth, he goes, "I just want to let you know I'm signing up. And I want to tell you why. And then we could talk about whatever else." And I go, "The mic's yours, buddy. What's going on?" He goes, "I listened to you talk about the day your dad died and how you did, what happened, how you handled that. I listened to that. I listened to that podcast twice under the one he was talking about." And he said during his wife's second pregnancy or second labor. So they have a 3-year-old child. His wife is having a complicated birth in the hospital. All the buzzers are going off. People are coming in and out. Chaos. And his 3-year-old son is going nuclear in the room. And he said, "Well, you know, I could say something, or I could get my breath low and slow and keep it there." Mm-hmm. Okay. See what happens, because we remember in that podcast. He said he got his breath low and slow and kept it there. And in 2 minutes, in the middle of all this chaos, his son crawled up on his chest and put his head on his chest and went to sleep. And he said, "Right then and there, I'm signing up for this certification." And do you need an Enlifted certification to be able to breathe well? No, you don't. Okay. We definitely help people address one of the main culprits of why they don't breathe well, which is the story that they tell themselves. If there's a lot of conflict language, if there's a lot of projecting, you know, she did this to me, or he won't let me live my life, or soft talk, thinks, maybes, mights, sort of guesses, that's going to force people into those stress responses and the breath will stay trapped. Anyway, go on YouTube. It's free. And take some breath work. Type in breath work class and watch what happens. Because here's the thing, everybody, you'll feel it. And if you feel it, then you know it. Yeah. So for sure, that's one of the unlocking of the breath is one of the, if not the hallmark of a job well done when it comes to personal development. In my personal professional opinion, that I've never said it like that before. And now that I'm saying this out loud, I'll noodle on it later. I might disagree with myself. I might agree with myself. It's the metric. Did your breathing improve? Okay. I'm a fan of psychedelics. I've done most of it. Went down and I had these visions from ayahuasca in the thing. Okay. Did your breathing? Oh, well, cosmic consciousness. Did your breathing improve? I read all these books about how to have better relationships. Did your breathing improve? Because guess what? If your breathing improves, then your relationships improve, because your vibe is going to be different. Your vibe is going to be better. Go on a date and hold your breath, everybody, all the boys, all the dudes, and let me know what happens. And if you really think about it, like the DSM-5 or all these labels, how much of that shit is just people holding their breath? Oh, I have social anxiety disorder. You mean you're holding your breath? I get really nervous when people question me. Oh, you mean you're holding your breath? I suffer from premature ejaculation. Oh, you're holding your breath. That's what premature ejaculation is. You're holding your breath. You're all in your head nervous and like a squirt, squirt, and nobody likes that shit. Right. Get your breath low and slow and watch what happens. It's just across the board, way better improvement of everything.
Such a fixable thing too. It's one of those.
Thank you. He just said it better than I did.
It's a component you can really incorporate into your daily life. And measurably so. I mean, you can pay attention to your breathing. Let's do this. Let's wrap up with your Alex Jones story. I got to hear this. Tell me how you wound up coming from your, you know, what you do and the way in which you do it, how you wind up on InfoWars.
I'll do this in 4 minutes. I could make it 14. So I'm out in the sticks, everybody. And for this, so we went on InfoWars November. When I say we, I mean, I go on, I'm the mouthpiece, but there's a team. November 2023. And 4 years prior, I went out to the end of the road and we're out the country and I put 4 InfoWars bumper stickers on the stop sign. Mm-hmm. And there they stayed forever. And I'd drive out and there'd be my stop sign with the InfoWars stickers on it for 4 years until I think it was June 2023. I'm driving out and I'm coming over the hill and I can see off in the distance, there's no stop sign. I'm like, what the hell? So I drive up on it and someone had run it over and then shot it up. Okay. Put a couple of bullet holes right in the middle. And I'm like, well, okay then. And so I go back home and wait for the cover of darkness. I may or may not have drank a 6-pack of Guinness. Drive out, yank the thing out of the ground, throw it in the back of the truck. I'll neither confirm nor deny. And then take it over to the boy's shop across the street and saw it off. So now I've got this stop sign that's all bent with a couple of 9mm rounds right in the middle. And these InfoWars stop signs, stickers on. I'm like, this thing is just the coolest. And so it sat over in the corner for about a month. And then finally I looked at it and I was like, I'm going to get that in Alex Jones's hands. Words, abracadabra, with my words I create. And not long after, one of my friends, Naomi, hot ass bikini model, Australian Naomi, went to the premiere of The Great Awakening. Mickey Willis.
Yep.
Did the Plandemic, Plandemic 2. She was dating the editor. And so she's in the green room. She sends me a video. I'm watching the premiere, which is in Austin, Texas, from my garage. And Alex Jones rolls in. He's the guest of honor, folks. And then she sends me a video of her in the green room, his wife in the green room, and him in the green room. And I go, there it is. And her and his wife became very good friends. And so she was living in Austin at the time and we were coming in to do, the Luke Story podcast, which is, he's a biohacker, knows about all this stuff, huge Alex Jones fan. Mm-hmm. We were coming in to do his podcast and I was like, hey, can you get us a dinner with Alex Jones? And went back and forth and she does. So we are at this barbecue restaurant on a Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, we're going on the Luke Story podcast. It's the biggest podcast we had been on to date. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that guy's meticulous with his health regime, okay? And guess what? If I'm having dinner with Alex Jones and that guy's ordering beers and shots of Patron, I'm going there. And so Alex Jones comes in. Larger than life. Hey, everybody, I just want to let you know this is really, really cool having dinner with y'all. And this is a barbecue joint that, you know, we've gone with my family for a long time. And, you know, so I got really good brisket. I recommend the brisket. And so we sit down and have dinner with Alex Jones. It's me, my business partner, Kimberly Keston, our podcast host, Naomi, Alex Jones, his wife, and then Ulrich, which is just fates in our world. And we're he's holy court telling stories. We're beating, drinking beers, shots. And then halfway through, he goes,
yeah, Mark, well, you know, I watched some of your videos on the victim mentality and how you go about talking about it. You make it really, really simple and easy to understand. I think our audience would really like you to come on. And if you can make it, come on at 1 o'clock on Thursday. We'd really like to have you on the show.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, I've got a piece of brisket on the end of my fork. I'm thinking to myself, okay. So I go, yes, Alex, I'll come on your show. So we end up staying there for a while. I rock up to the Luke Story podcast. I'm not wearing it, but I can tell that I've been up drinking the night before. And Luke was super cool guy. He's like, hey, how y'all doing? Like in Austin and stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, he's a little bit of a controversial figure. And we were out to dinner last night with Alex Jones. He goes, oh my God, I'm the biggest Alex Jones fan. And I go, dude, I'm going on InfoWars tomorrow. Oh, and he just loses it, starts fanboying us. I actually put them in touch a couple months later, and he went on his show last year. Anyway, so I rock up. We're almost done. I rock up to this complex, and I pull in, and there's no numbers anywhere. It's this big industrial complex. Take where the Google Maps told me to go, and I'm parked there, and I lock eyes with this guy across the parking lot who's in this, he's all tacked out, body armor, comms, of course, guns, multiple mags, handcuffs. And he comes up to the truck and he goes, hey, what's going on, man? I'm like, hi. And he goes, well, what are you doing? And I go, I'm here to do an interview. And he goes, who with? I go, Alex Jones, InfoWars. He goes, Alex Jones. I don't know. Maybe you need to go across the street. I'm like, this is where they told me to go. And he goes, do you have a point of contact? And I go, blah, blah, blah. I said the woman's name. He goes, we've been expecting you, Mr. Ingram. Please pull in that parking lot right there. And then he saw some stickers on my truck. We start talking about gun shit. And then I walk in, and the rest you can see if you Google Mark England InfoWars. Nice. It's on band.video, actually. So, yeah. And I went on there and talked about the same damn thing. The victim mentality, the dangers of it, and how it's an important thing for us to do regardless of what the government does. Yeah. The government wants to light everybody on fire. Great. Tell yourself a story that you're confident and competent and unlock your breath. Okay? The government just goes away and never bothers anybody again. Great. Tell yourself a story that you're confident and competent and go plant a garden either way and enjoy your life. Yeah. Either way, enjoy your life.
Well, I'll tell you, it's important to have a good mindset. You know, that way you can turn your goals into reality. I know there's a lot of people out there that think that that only happens because somebody got lucky or whatever. There's a lot of reasons why you might pretend that somebody else was successful and you weren't, but it's about mindset, right? About how you view the world and how, you know, if you go into it with the right frame of mind, it's not to say that everything is going to turn out your way every single time, right? But you're just going to be in a better place mentally for it, whether it's interacting with other people and bringing good energy into the mix bringing good breathing into the mix, right? As you said, it's like really important how you handle and how you carry yourself and how you behave and it's okay to be successful. You know, it's okay. It's an attractive quality, I think, in people. So this idea that you have to talk about how all the things that are, you know, barriers to you. I mean, I think maybe some of your good friends are there for you and they want to help you work that out. And I think there's value in that. But if you're telling perfect strangers about all the hurdles that you face, who's interested in that? Like, that's just that's a personality trait that I'm not really interested in hanging out with people like that are doing that, you know. And when I catch myself doing it, I have to be mindful of that as well. I'd say, well, don't go down that path. So I think the good news is, Mark, that a lot of this stuff is fixable, right? I mean, if we're gonna, some things are out of our control, right? But to the extent that these things, if we're aware of them, it's pretty good. If we're aware of them first, then we know we need to fix them. And then if we don't know how to fix them, we can find people like you that can help us fix them, right? Like, so we're not alone here, right? And we don't get born with this instruction manual on how to run our lives. And we kind of have to figure it out as we go along. And every now and then I bump into a guy like you and I go, okay, well, good. Like, you're like an emotional mechanic, right? Like, I could take my car into the shop with you.
Dude.
You can fix a couple things, but you can also say the next time you hear this rattling, it means it's this thing, right? And you can go in there and fix it yourself, right? So that's kind of, sometimes we need that, right? You need a coach, you need a gym partner, you need somebody to say, hey man, you're your mentality right now is dog shit, and but it's fixable. Let's fix it, right? Is that where we go?
1,000%. Anybody can get in shape. Anybody can get in better shape, okay? Regardless. Anybody can make some improvements to the story that they tell themselves. That's their mindset. That's our mindset. And if somebody changes their mindset, they're going to be using different words. That's where the rubber meets the road.
Well, I'm really glad you came out here. Let's wrap up with this. Tell everybody where they can find you, because I know a lot of people are probably thinking, all right, I need to know more about this. I need to see if this is a good fit for me. Hopefully it is. I think people will. Tell them where they can find you. Tell them where they can find the podcast, where they can, we already know where we can find the Alex Jones clip. We'll find that on YouTube somewhere. But
our website is enlifted.me, www.enlifted.me. And Instagram @enliftedcoaches. If you send me a message on Instagram, I reply to all of them. I'm not allowed to post. I got myself in trouble a while ago, and I was like, that's okay, great. Fine. I won't post anything. That's us.
Well, I'm glad you guys are there. I'm glad you guys are fixing people
who
need some help. I guess the first step in this process is realizing that you have some components that need to be fixed. That's okay. We all do. There's no shame in that, right? It's better to address them, start the process of fixing that, and get yourself on the right path and moving towards a better version of yourself. That's Mark England, everybody. You can check him out at enlifted.me. You can catch his podcast, Enlifted Podcasts, with his partner, Kimberly. You can check that out. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website, the best place to do that, to find out information about the books and the podcasts and the news sites. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Behind every BP fill-up, thousands of people across America go to work every day. People producing energy offshore, people turning it into products at our refineries, people doing R&D to make products that are better for your engine, people trading and shipping fuels to their destinations, and the people who help you at one of BP's growing family of retail stations. They're part of almost 300,000 jobs BP supports across the country. Learn more at bp.com/investing in America.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.